In The Social Engineer uses the art of deception to influence the person on the other side of the door to open up for him. Easy Money. When I was first introduced to computers in high school, we had to connect over a modem to one central DEC PDP-11 minicomputer in downtown Los Angeles that all the high schools in L.A. shared. The operating system on that computer was called RSTS-E, and it was the operating system I first learned to work with. At that time, in 1981, DEC sponsored an annual conference for its product users, and one year, I read that the conference was going to be held in L.A. A popular magazine for users of this operating system carried an announcement about a new security product, Lock 11. The product was being promoted with a clever ad campaign that said something like, "It's 3:30 a.m., and Johnny down the street found your dial-in number, 555-0336, and on his 336th try, he's in, and you're out. Get Lock 11. The product, the ad suggested, was hacker-proof, and it was going to be on display at the conference. I was eager to see the product for myself. A high school buddy and friend, Vinny, my hacking partner for several years, who later became a federal informant against me, shared my interest in the new DEC product and encouraged me to go to the conference with him. Cash on the line. We arrived to find a big buzz already going around the crowd at the trade show about Lock 11. It seemed that the developers were staking cash on the line in a bet that no one could break into their product. Sounded like a challenge I could not resist. We headed straight for the Lock 11 booth and found it manned by three guys who were the developers of the product. I recognized them, and they recognized me. Even as a teen, I already had a reputation as a freaker and hacker because of a big story the L.A. Times had run about my first juvenile brush with the authorities. The article reported that I had talked my way into a Pacific Telephone building in the middle of the night and walked out with computer manuals right under the nose of their security guard. It appears the Times wanted to run a sensationalist story, and it served their purposes to publish my name. Because I was still a juvenile, the article violated the custom, if not the law, of withholding the names of minors accused of wrongdoing. When Vinny and I walked up, it created some interest on both sides. There was an interest on their side, because they recognized me as the hacker they had read about, and they were a bit shocked to see me. It created an interest on our side, because each of the three developers was standing there with a $100 bill sticking out of his trade show badge. The prize money for anybody who could defeat their system would be the whole $300, which sounded like a lot of money to a pair of teenagers. We could hardly wait to get started. Lock 11 was designed on an established principle that relied on two levels of security. A user had to have a valid ID and password, as usual, but in addition, that ID and password would only work when entered from authorized terminals, an approach called terminal-based security. To defeat the system, a hacker would need not only to have knowledge of an account ID and password, but would also have to enter that information from the correct terminal. The method was well established, and the inventors of Lock 11 were convinced it would keep the bad guys out. We decided we were going to teach them a lesson and earn $300 to boot. Lingo. Terminal-based security. Security based in part on the identification of the particular computer terminal being used. This method of security was especially popular with IBM mainframe computers. A guy I knew who was considered an RSTS-E guru had already beaten us to the booth. Years before, he had been one of the guys who had challenged me to break into the DEC internal development computer, after which his associates had turned me in. Since those days, he had become a respected programmer. We found out that he had tried to defeat the Lock 11 security program not long before we arrived, but had been unable to. The incident had given the developers greater confidence that their product really was secure. The contest was a straightforward challenge. You break in, you win the bucks. A good publicity stunt. Unless somebody was able to embarrass them and take the money. They were so sure of their product that they were even audacious enough to have a printout posted at the booth giving the account numbers and corresponding passwords to some accounts on the system. And not just regular user accounts, but all the privileged accounts. That was actually less daring than it sounds. In this type of setup, I knew each terminal is plugged into a port on the computer itself. It wasn't rocket science to figure out they had set up the 5 terminals in the conference hall so a visitor could log in only as a non-privileged user. That is, logins were possible only to accounts without system administrator privileges. It looked as if there were only 2 routes. Either bypass the security software altogether, exactly what the Lock 11 was designed to prevent, or somehow get around the software in a way that the developers hadn't imagined. Taking up the challenge. Vinny and I walked away and talked about the challenge, and I came up with a plan. We wandered around innocently, keeping an eye on the booth from a distance. At lunchtime, when the crowd thinned out, the 3 developers took advantage of the break and took off together to get something to eat, leaving behind a woman who might have been the wife or girlfriend of one of them. We sauntered back over, and I distracted the woman, chatting her up about this and that. How long have you been with the company? What other products does your company have on the market? And so on. Meanwhile, Vinny, out of her sight line, had gone to work, making use of a skill he and I had both developed. Besides the fascination